You're listening to CHSR 97.9 FM. Welcome to This Week in Fredericton, the show that takes a deep dive into the latest news from your community. I'm your host, Zach Roman, and in this week's episode, we chat with Francie Morgan, a program coordinator for the nonprofit organization Nature New Brunswick. Morgan visited CHSR on August 6th after a morning of monarch butterfly monitoring in the Belle Isle Marsh. This summer, Nature New Brunswick has been doing work in Fredericton and beyond to help pollinators.
My name is Francie Morgan, and I am a program coordinator at Nature New Brunswick, and I am in charge of the majority of our pollinator initiatives.
Awesome. How long have you been with Nature NB?
I've been with Nature NB for 2.5 years now, and I started out as a program naturalist and have moved into this role of facilitating workshops around species at risk and coordinating our monitoring programs.
Cool. Can you tell me a little bit about Nature NB itself?
Yeah, sure. So Nature NB was established in 1972, and initially the organization was an umbrella organization for naturalist clubs across the province. And over the decades, we have evolved into an organization that provides education programming in schools and for the public. And we have really branched out in the last 15, 20 years to take on a number of conservation initiatives across the province. So we do piping plover conservation work up in the northern part of the province. We do a lot of monitoring for species at risk. We do water bird surveys. We do monarch surveys. We have began doing bumblebee surveys. And we work a lot with other organizations and partners across the province to conserve and educate and protect nature in New Brunswick.
Can you tell me a little bit about what you were up to this morning?
Yeah, sure. So I guess the first thing I'd like to say is, yes, we do focus a lot on monarchs, but we are starting to branch out into pollinators as a whole. This morning, I found myself in Belle Isle with the St. John River Society and the Belle Isle Watershed Coalition. Myself and my summer students joined their crew and a number of folks from the public to do a monarch monitoring survey. So we were out in the Belle Isle Marsh flipping milkweed leaves and looking for eggs and caterpillars.
Tell me a little bit more about what a monitoring survey is.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people don't realize that a lot of the data that is being used to inform conservation work across Canada, even the United States, and in Mexico in the case of monarchs, is actually derived from community science. And a big part of what we're doing at Nature NB is not only educating folks about the species that we have in New Brunswick, but it's also our intention is to empower folks to become involved. And so the monitoring that work that we do really falls into the category of community science. So it's accessible, it is easy to learn, and it really is available to anybody who's keen enough to get involved. So we do our monarch surveys mostly with the public. We do a number with our staff individually because those ones take a little bit more time. They're a bit more involved. But these mission monarch surveys that we do really are bringing people out, teaching them about the life cycle of the monarch, the migration habits of the monarch, and getting people into patches of milkweed to look for eggs and caterpillars so that we can get an idea from year to year how the population is doing. So we record how many stems or how many plants we look at. We record the number of eggs, the number of caterpillars, chrysalis, and adults, and then that information is extrapolated. So obviously we can't inspect every milkweed plant in New Brunswick, but we try to do a diversity of surveys across the province, and then that information is actually put into an open source database through the Montreal Insectarium. And that information actually comes from organizations, from individuals, from community groups, from Indigenous groups all across Eastern Canada, so Quebec, Ontario, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and PEI. And we have this really amazing database that goes back many years now that we can look to say, okay, you know, at this point in the season, because generally we do a big blitz around the end of July, beginning of August, which is kind of peak reproductive time, we can say, okay, 2019 was a really big year, and then 2023 was a really low year, and we can it's not entirely anecdotal because we are,
It's
not entirely anecdotal because we do survey. And count, and that information is official. But of course, again, we can't monitor the entire province. So it's just helping to create a clearer picture of how monarchs are doing in our region. Now, this is significant because New Brunswick is at the northern part of the migratory range of monarch butterflies, of the eastern population of monarchs. There are monarchs in many places around the world, but the eastern population of monarchs is really special because they migrate further than any insect in the world. And they migrate from Canada through the United States all the way to Mexico. And if you want to know about that migration, it's a pretty amazing story. So at the end of the season, which is when we are going out and doing our tagging work and our staging surveys, so that survey is looking at habitat, the monarchs that are emerging from their chrysalis at that point, we call it eclosing, they have been getting environmental cues while they're in their chrysalis. And those cues of shorter days, so less light, and cooler temperatures, particularly at night, are giving the monarch information that says, when you emerge, the conditions will not be good for reproduction. So you need to reconfigure how you're growing so that you can grow bigger and stronger than the generations before you so that you can migrate all the way to Mexico. So those monarchs will leave here. And of course, there are many monarchs in southern Ontario that are also doing the same thing in New Jersey. Not all the monarchs make their way up to New Brunswick, but we do get a population of them that come up here. So they leave in the fall and they fly, hopefully, all the way to Mexico. And when they're in Mexico, they are all converging in a very particular habitat of OML fir trees. So it's an OML fir forest in the Sierra Madre Mountains. And these old growth forests for a long time were under threat by logging. And they have, over the last number of years, have really become much more heavily protected, particularly by indigenous groups who are doing a lot of advocacy and protection work in Mexico. And so these special forests are very particularly adapted or I should say that the monarchs are particularly adapted for surviving over the winter in these forests. It's pretty amazing. They roost in these fir trees in the millions. And most of us have seen images of that, of the trees literally dripping with butterflies. Sometimes there's stories of branches breaking because there's so many butterflies. You know, imagining a conifer branch breaking under the weight of butterflies. Now, they don't do a whole lot. They're kind of in a waiting pattern. And what they're waiting for are those beautiful spring winds that are going to come in off the Gulf of Mexico that are going to tell their bodies, hey, that reproductive system that you have that's been in a dormant state, we call it diapause, it's time to turn that back on and it's time to get going. And so what they're going to do is they're going to feed, they're going to mate, and they're going to start traveling north again. But they're not actually going to make it that far. They have lived about 8 months, which is pretty spectacular when we talk about the next generation. So they make their way up north, laying eggs along the way, and they're only really gonna make it to the southern part of the states. So maybe Florida, maybe only Texas. And those eggs that they lay along the way are going to be taking the next leg of the journey because that's their stopping point. Those ones that left New Brunswick, they're gonna die down in the southern states. Now, their babies will turn into caterpillars, will turn into butterflies, and they're going to make their way up further. Now, it's going to take a couple generations to make it back to New Brunswick because those butterflies that hatch out, instead of living 8 months, they only live 3 to 6 weeks. And they are smaller, and they're not built for super long distance migration. And their reproductive system is kind of their priority. So they are making their way north, laying eggs along the way. And then it's going to take 2 to 3 generations to make it back up to New Brunswick. Now, in New Brunswick, we usually only have the generation of the ones who arrive and then our migratory generation. But sometimes, on a really good year, if conditions align properly, we have had them as early as May. But it's pretty typical that we're not really starting to see them until June. So we'll have one and then a second generation that will be the migratory generation. Again, butterflies, susceptible to hurricanes and extreme weather. So climate change is a really big factor for them. And so, yeah, one of the things that we're really trying to do is to educate people about the importance of milkweed and the importance of pollinator habitat that, you know, people can help encourage in their own backyards, in their work yards, in their schoolyards. And so, yeah, that's a big part of what we do with monarchs.
When they get back up here to New Brunswick, how do they then know, okay, it's time to become a long-distance traveling generation of butterflies again.
Yeah, so it's those environmental cues that are super important. So it's really not until they're in their chrysalis form that they're getting those environmental cues that will tell them, okay, you know, actually, I don't think it's a good idea for you to emerge with an active reproductive system. I mean, obviously, there's not a conversation, but chemically, you know, with the temperatures and the length of the day. So when they emerge, they are prepared for the conditions that they're in. And this is a really big factor for us in trying to educate people around the challenges and the risks of raising butterflies. Now, we totally understand that there's a huge educational value to raising butterflies and for kids to watch that whole process. And I think there's also a really strong emotional value for people to feel like they have protected a butterfly from being eaten by predators and are able to, you know, see it off on its migration unscathed. The big factors there are that there are parasites that butterflies are susceptible to, and monarchs in particular. There is a parasite called Ophiocystis electroscira. We call it OE, of course, because no one wants to try and remember that. But this parasite is highly contagious. And if butterflies are kept in captivity in close quarters, they most definitely are transmitting that. And the frequency of it within the population is almost a guarantee that if you have more than, you know, one or two butterflies in an enclosure, that they're probably all going to get infected. And the thing about this parasite is that it affects development. So once they go into their chrysalis state, if they have OE, it's very likely that they're going to emerge unable to fly because their wings won't develop properly. Their physiology just will be damaged by the parasite. So that's a big factor in not wanting to rear caterpillars, you know, in captivity. But the other thing that we really are trying to help people understand is that if you raise a caterpillar in captivity, even if it's an individual caterpillar, you need your enclosure to mimic the conditions of outside. So really, your enclosure needs to be outside with the daylight, with the weather, with the temperature that's outside. Because if they aren't getting those environmental cues, if they emerge at the end of August and the cues that they've been getting because they're in an indoor setting are, oh, the light is long, the temperatures are warm, they will emerge ready to reproduce instead of ready to migrate. And those smaller reproductive monarchs just don't have what it takes to make that distance to Mexico. So it's a bit of a death sentence for them and for their offspring.
If you're just tuning in, welcome to This Week in Fredericton, the show that takes a deep dive into the latest news from your community. Today we're chatting with Francie Morgan, a program coordinator with the nonprofit organization Nature New Brunswick, about monarch butterflies and helping pollinators. One of the ways people can help monarchs and other pollinators is by making changes to their garden.
Obviously, milkweed is an incredibly important plant for monarchs. It's important for them reproductively. That means that it is their host plant for their caterpillars. So monarchs, as adults, can nectar on many different plants, but they can only lay their eggs on milkweed. And we have two different varieties in New Brunswick. We have swamp milkweed, we have common milkweed. Common milkweed people will recognize because it grows on the side of the road, on the side of the bike path, and it has these large kind of oval leaves, beautiful, fragrant pink flowers, and if you break the leaves, it has this white sap. Now, similarly, swamp milkweed has the white sap, it has beautiful pink flowers, which are a little bit more delicate, but the same structure, and their leaves are kind of longer and more delicate and kind of a longer strap. Now, I would not advise planting common milkweed in your garden because it spreads like stink, because it grows rhizomally and it will spread all over. So unless you want your whole garden to be common milkweed, do not plant it. However, if you would like to plant swamp milkweed is much better behaved in a garden setting because it stays where you plant it. It may drop seed that may germinate, but you can always dig those up and put them somewhere else or just pull them as a weed. It will grow more stems in that nice bunch where you've put it, but it won't take over your garden. We actually have seeds available to anyone interested, so if you go on our website, naturenb.ca, you can request milkweed seeds from us, and we will happily send them to you in the mail. But aside from that, as we are branching out into more pollinator work, it's really important to note that if you are doing any sort of gardening or landscaping to benefit monarchs, it is inevitably going to benefit other pollinators. So it's going to benefit bumblebees and minor bees and leafcutter bees and butterflies and hummingbirds, because monarchs need a whole variety of nectar plants. And the amazing thing is that a lot of the what we would think of as weeds, the native plants that grow around here, don't even require planting. Most places have such a seed bank in the soil from native plants that if you stop mowing in certain areas, eventually those plants will come back in. So I'm talking about things like goldenrod, which we see in the ditches. Goldenrod is an incredibly important nectar and pollen source for many pollinators. Asters, which are those beautiful kind of small, they almost look like a small purple daisy, but they grow in these big clusters. And we see them in the ditches in August and into September. And then there are many other native species that have really had a reduction in their range because there's not a ton of meadow habitat and not a lot of people grow native plants in their garden. So there are things like cardinal flower, yellow cutleaf coneflower, blue vervain. There are many, many options. And if you are interested in growing some of those in your garden, we have recently begun a club called the Seed Sitters Club, where we are providing folks with native seed with the intention that they will grow out those plants and then recontribute those seeds back so that other people, they can be redistributed to other people. So we're really trying to build a community of, you know, pollinator-minded gardeners and landscapers and homeowners. So if you are interested, again, reach out, naturenb.ca. You can actually reach out to info@naturenb.ca. That's our email. A big part, this whole no mow May, I would prefer if people just picked a small section of their yard and just stopped mowing it forever, not just for May, instead of, you know, your whole yard. Because while dandelions can be helpful, if they're the only food source, preferably we would want to have, a good diversity of native seed, native nectar around. And then, of course, in the fall, when those native plants go to seed, it's incredibly great food source for birds and many other animals around.
If people wanted to get involved in data collection, how would they start doing that?
So that's the wonderful thing about living in the era that we live in, is that there is a wealth of technology that can help really for the better, that can really aid in these conservation efforts. And one of the things that we like to promote pretty frequently is iNaturalist. A lot of people are probably familiar, but if you are not, the app iNaturalist enables people to make photo, video, sound observations and contribute them to the database. When you take a picture on iNaturalist, even if you don't know what it is, it's going to provide you with some options. The best thing is if you have your location services on, when that observation goes out, it becomes accessible to anybody who's trying to acquire information about that particular species or that particular area. So if I found a bumblebee in my yard, I could, you know, take a photo, have my location services on. I might say, I think this is a yellow-banded bumblebee. And there are a number of folks who work and volunteer for iNaturalist who will peer review your observation and say, yep, I approve, that is a yellow-banded bumblebee, or nope, actually that's a northern golden, or, you know, provide some other options. And if you don't know at all, the nice thing is that when you put your photo up there, it will say, here are some suggestions on what you have seen. And then you can pick your best guess, because it will provide you with photos of that other that species that it's suggesting. So that's a wonderful way to get involved. We also do citizen science workshops at Nature New Brunswick. We are hoping, moving forward, that we're going to be able to involve more folks in our bumblebee surveys. But this year, we're piloting these surveys for the first time, so we want to make sure that we have a really good handle on them, that they're happening in a safe and effective way before we involve members of the public. But we really also just encourage folks to, yes, submit their observations through iNaturalist, because we use that information. Many NGOs across New Brunswick use that information to inform which sort of conservation decisions we're going to be making and which direction and which areas we want to focus on. So another thing that we do at Nature New Brunswick to educate, collect data, and inform conservation is tagging work with monarchs. So for the last number of years, we have been using wing tags to tag monarchs so that we can track their migratory routes. And these wing tags are a teeny tiny little sticker that gets placed on the forewing of a butterfly that has a specific serial number on it that is attached to that individual. And when it is put into the database, into the Monarch Watch database, that number is associated with the day, the time, the weather conditions, the wind conditions, the wing conditions. So we assess the condition of the butterfly, we measure their wings and weigh them. We indicate whether they're male or female and, you know, their general health, and then we test them for that parasite, Ophiocystis electroscura. And then we send them on their way, with the hope that as they make their way down on the migratory route, that they will be recaptured by another organization doing monarch conservation. Because all along the eastern seaboard, during migration season, there are a huge number of organizations doing monarch tagging and monarch monitoring work. And so say we tagged a monarch together today. I mean, it wouldn't be today, but say we tagged a monarch together at the end of August. And that number, 97046, we would say this monarch was tagged by Zach. It was tagged on the UNB campus, and it was on August 27th. It was a female, and it was in great condition, blah, 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 all that information. We put it into the database, and we release her onto her journey. If she gets recaptured in New Jersey, they will capture and say, oh, she's already got a tag. Let's see where she came from. And then they will put into the database, this butterfly was recaptured in New Jersey. So we know that she went from New Brunswick to New Jersey, and we can tell how long it took generally to get there, whether or not she is in any sort of damaged condition. If they are also testing for OE, they might also be able to indicate whether or not she's become infected during that period of time, if she was well before. And so we can start forming a map of that migration route down to Mexico the more times that that butterfly gets captured. And it's possible that she may also be recaptured in Mexico or in the southern United States, or found when she's deceased in the southern United States. The other thing that we are piloting for the first time this year, which is incredibly exciting, is we are going to be deploying 30 blue morpho tags. So these tags are Bluetooth enabled, teeny tiny solar panel tags that will be glued onto the thorax of the butterfly so that we can map in real time when they move by folks who have Bluetooth enabled cell phones. Hopefully we can map in real time that migratory route down to Mexico. So please, if you have the capacity during August and September, to turn on your Bluetooth on your phone and make sure it's open if you're keen to be involved. And you can also download the Project Monarch app. Now this app, you can scan if you are out and about to see if there are any tagged monarchs in your area. It's not likely if you're in New Brunswick, because we're only going to be tagging 30, and most of those are going to be deployed from Pointe La Proix. So they will be in a kind of distinct area, but you can follow the tagged monarchs on the map, because there will be a live map on there that shows the route that they've taken. So for the first time ever, we are going to be deploying these tags from the Maritimes, not just for the first time for us, but for anybody. And we are going to actually have a real live, you know, recording of where they're traveling to, which is incredibly informative in terms of understanding the importance of particular habitat. So again, those tags are funded through Environment and Climate Change Canada, through the HSP funding, and through the Wildlife Trust Fund. And we will also be receiving 5 additional tags directly from Environment and Climate Change Canada. So it's a big collaborative effort. We will be deploying those with the St. John Naturalist Club. And so stay tuned. It's going to be exciting scientific piloting for the first time ever in New Brunswick.
Morgan said Nature New Brunswick is very grateful for its funding support.
I think it is really important to understand that that NGOs in New Brunswick and a lot of community groups and watershed groups are really highly dependent on funding. So we can do the work that we do and provide the resources for free and the educational workshops for free because we get funding through the province of New Brunswick, through the Wildlife Trust Fund and the Environmental Trust Fund. We also get funding through the federal government, through Environment and Climate Change Canada. And then we have a number of smaller foundations who fund us as well. But our monarch and our bumblebee, our pollinator work in general, is funded through the province and through the federal government. And we're incredibly grateful for that because, yeah, we're a non-for-profit. So we try to make everything financially accessible to as many folks as we can.
Thanks for listening to This Week in Fredericton, the show that takes a deep dive into the latest news from your community. We're on the air every Friday from 11:30 a.m. to noon, right here on CHSR 97.9 FM. If you have a news tip, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us by email at news@chsrfm.ca. I'm your host, Zach Roman, and I also do daily news updates for CHSR. Earlier this week, we talked about the City of Fredericton's noise bylaw. The City of Fredericton is set to update its noise bylaw. The key change in the bylaw is the addition of an official definition for amplified sound, which will be defined as any sound made by an electronic device or group of connected electronic devices, incorporating one or more loudspeakers or other electromechanical transducers, and intended for the production, reproduction, or amplification of sound. Amplified sound, so defined, is set to be exempt from the noise bylaw from 9 a.m. to midnight in the city center, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. in the north and south core, and 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. in all other areas. According to a report presented at Fredericton City Council's August 10 meeting, the proposed bylaw amendments have been made to provide greater clarity and predictability for residents and businesses. The report also states the changes will help with bylaw enforceability. The report notes extended exemption hours in the city center reflect the vibrant nature of the area, where a higher level of activity is generally anticipated. Approval of the August 10 report means the city's legal division has been authorized to draft these updates to the city's noise bylaw. Thanks again for tuning in to This Week in Fredericton, the show that's dedicated to bringing Fredericton residents news about their community and the people that shape it. Each week's episode is posted in full on our website, chsrfm.ca. I'm Zach Roman, and that was This Week in Fredericton on your community radio station, CHSR 97.9 FM.